They found something that looks like a golden rocket kind of thing. And on top of it, it even has an antenna. What they recovered is very, 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 very interesting, okay? So they had like 7 layers of lingams or containers. They thought it was just an iron cylinder inside the underground vault. But they removed it, and underneath there was another tin cylinder. And underneath there was another silver cylinder. And underneath there was another golden cylinder. And inside that, they found like a rocket ship kind of stupa. And then there was a...
Before we get into today's content, on behalf of the Fifth Kind TV, I want to say a big thank you to Surfshark for sponsoring today's content. Surfshark is a VPN that allows us all to become citizens of the world through online access. If you're like me, you'll enjoy watching online content from countries all around the world. But I live in Australia, and what I'm shown in internet searches will be different to what you're shown in Canada, America, the Philippines, Germany, the Netherlands, or wherever you're watching from. By using Surfshark, I'm able to access a world of online content and see all the things that you see and many other things beside. Surfshark enables us to become citizens of the world through online availability. Get fully protected. Go to surfshark.com/fifthkind and get 4 months for free. Surfshark offers a 30-day money-back guarantee, so if you try it and you don't like it, you can easily cancel your subscription and receive a full refund. With Surfshark, you can swim under the radar in the sea of online content. In the Vedas, we've got this vision that encompasses aspects of a very interesting populated cosmos, references to very intriguing technology. There's so much that's going on in the texts. And then you and I will be seeing this in card form when we go to Thailand together. But sometimes there's a hint that the temple itself is some kind of a technology. And when I say technology, we're still talking about spirituality when I say that. And perhaps a place that that might exemplify that is the Wan Tam Temple. I wonder if you could speak to that, about the building itself seeming to represent some kind of advanced knowledge or advanced tech.
Are we talking about the Muang Tam Temple? Is that what you're talking about?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So this is an ancient temple. Okay. This is a very, very old temple that's right next to the Phnom Rang. So when we go to, this is almost near the Cambodia border. We would have gone far away from, the capital of Bangkok. But when you go to the Phnom Rang Temple, we're going to the Phnom Rang Temple on the first day, and we're going to the Muang Tam Temple on the next day. The temple, if you look at the aerial view of the temple, it is so fascinating, right? It's so fascinating. Yes. It's built in a way that's kind of, you feel that we're talking about the cymatic patterns or energy carvings, like small carvings. And even if the naga is big, like maybe this big carving, but what if this entire temple is built like a giant cymatics pattern? Okay. It's built like a giant energy machine. And that's what we find when we go there. So, and one more thing that we need to know is that when we are looking at these patterns, we think these are 2D, okay? So we think these appear on a surface. But no, these are 3D patterns, right? These sounds are 3D patterns. And in India, they have these yantras. They call them yantra, which literally means a machine in ancient Sanskrit. And if you go, or if you come to India, you can go to any of these traditional country shops, and you can buy a yantra, like a Shri yantra. It's very common, Shri yantra. Everybody in the house has the Sri Yantra. And if you Google it, you find out what I mean. And from the top, it looked like a cymatics pattern. From the top, it'll just look like a circle. But it's actually a 3D that looks kind of like the mountain of Meru with all these little things and circles. And that's what we find with ancient temples like Muang Thom. Okay, so the Muang Thom temple itself looks like a giant energy machine surrounded by water on all four sides. So when you go there, you'll find out it has this magical energy to it. You know, we're not looking at this little thing. You're actually entering an ancient energy machine.
Yes, yes. So as a cymatic pattern, that suggests that the whole temple exists to create a particular frequency. And if you've got dense magnetic stone adjacent to water, then you will have an E-field happening. So people are going to feel different walking into that environment, which brings me to the question of why people went. What did they go to a temple like Muang Thom for in the deep past? We always assume if we use the word temple, we're talking about worship or prayer. But were there other things going on? Or was it prayer for something particular?
Now, we're still researching the Muang Thom temple, so there's no conclusive evidence of that, okay? But I want to tell you something like this. So if you go, let's say I have chronic back pain, okay? I don't, but I'm saying, let's say I have. So if I go to the doctor, he's going to give me all sorts of pills and all that stuff. But if I go to the priest or if I go to the astrologer, he's going to direct me to three different temples in my country. And if I go to these temples and if I worship there for, like, let's say 5 days each, then my back pain is, quote unquote, magically gone. Okay. Now, if you're a woman and if you're not able to bear a child, you would be directed to a different set of temples. You see?
Yes.
Okay. So, and if you're chronically depressed, you will be sent to a different set of temples. Now, this is still happening in India. This is still happening in India. Of course, this tradition is lost in Thailand. This tradition is lost in Thailand. Okay. So we don't know what people were doing 500 years ago. Okay. So we don't know, but there must be a specific reason for the Muang Thom temple. For example, it could be a temple that heals your depression. It could be a temple that heals your kind of general health problems kind of thing. Now, we don't know exactly, right? And I'm sure science is going to find this maybe 50 years from now. They're going to set you to a different vibration and a different tone that can heal you, okay? So if you have back problems, putting you in a different vibration can heal that back problem. I think this is going to be the future. Now, we don't know what problems Muang Thom is going to solve, but it's definitely going to heal you, right? And I think if we look at the aerial view and all this architecture is a clue of what that frequency is. That chakra, that yantra is literally telling us what that frequency is to heal your problems, but we don't know exactly what it heals.
Around the world, there seem to be many places of pilgrimage related to fertility. So you mentioned earlier women who are having difficulty producing a child, looking for something that will help them with their fertility. And of course, the story of the fertility of the land has been a vital part of our story through history. Among the temples of Thailand, have you found any that have a focus in that direction that you suspect, because maybe of the symbology there or the carvings left behind, that this was somewhere that people may have been directed if they were looking for fertility?
We see this all over the temples. Okay, one of the you mentioned, you kind of touched upon the subject a little bit, right? So when people hear a temple, they normally think of it as a place of worship. Okay, so this is a very common assumption when we say, "Oh, there's a temple." People think that, "Oh, we just go there and we just pray to the deity or statue, or whatever, and then we just go about our business," right? But the ancient Hindu temples are completely different pieces of work. They had carvings of war. They had carvings of people wrestling. They have carvings of erotica. Okay, they have lots of carvings of erotica. Now, this doesn't actually belong in a place of worship. Today, we don't consider, like, you know, erotic carvings as a part of place where you would worship, right? But we do see a lot of erotic carvings there, right? And there's one particular temple called the Phnom Won Temple. This is kind of the White Mountain. It's a very brilliant temple, and it's kind of a hidden gem because even, you know, real researchers don't go to the Phnom Won Temple. And when we went there, we actually noticed that some of the locals come and they were worshiping it, praying to the gods for them to get pregnant. We see, and you'll notice this again and again in India, in Cambodia, in Thailand, you will see women, you know, young, maybe in their 20s, they're coming there to worship. If they're not able to bear children, they come to these temples, and I don't know how to explain it, but these people come to these specific temples like Phnom Won to get their fertility. Okay. And then sometimes I think there's like a practical reason to this too. In India, if there is a couple who got married and if they don't have children for a year, okay, they will be sent to three different temples, right? So the woman can bear a child. Now, of course, this, if you're a very hardcore materialistic scientism believer, you're going to be like, this is really weird. You know, how can you go to a temple or a set of three temples, and how can a person get pregnant? Now, the most popular temples that people send them to get pregnant, one of them is a Konark Sun Temple, okay? The other one is the Khajuraho Temple, and there's one more temple. Now, if you go to these temples, you will find a lot of erotic carvings. Okay, for example, if you go to and Google Konark or Khajuraho, there are hundreds of carvings of erotic material there. Okay, and the first time when I went to Konark, I had taken, you know, one of my friends there. And this guy is a monk, literally this guy is a monk. And after going to the Konark Sun Temple, when we went back to the hotel, he was, you know, he almost changed his mind, right? He was ready to destroy his monkhood. He had been a monk for maybe 12, 13 years. And I had taken him to a Konark, to the ancient Konark Temple, right? Because, and he signed up because it's an ancient temple, right? But when we went to the Konark Sun Temple and we literally study all the carvings, right? So I researched all these carvings. So I'd taken him, it happened a long time ago in 2013, like 13, 14 years ago. And this guy's, so when I took him and when we were sitting inside the temple from dawn to dusk, at night, we were sitting outside, we were looking at, you know, we were just discussing what to do the next day, because next day we were just going to go back. And he could not stop talking about sex. Can you believe that? Because, I mean, if you're going to look at these giant carvings all around you, you know, various positions and all these details, you know. Now, I was shocked because he never talks like that. He's a real monk, but he never talks like that, right? But if I had taken him to the other two temples, like Khajuraho and another erotic temple. This, I might have just taken him out of his monkhood, right? So there is some science behind sending a couple who are not able to have babies to these temples. If it can affect the monk like that, imagine yes. what happens to a young couple.
Yes. Well, this is another difference between the narratives and the art of the Judeo-Christian tradition with that of the Hindu tradition. Because if I had somebody come to me and say, I need to skill myself up, I'm getting married, I wouldn't be showing them church art, you know, from the Christian tradition. They wouldn't learn anything from that. I couldn't point them to the Bible. I might say, well, you could read Song of Songs, but there are no pictures. And it's really very vague and enigmatic. Again, so different from the Eastern tradition. And just to share something personal, when I was asking a question like that in my innocence preparing for marriage, I was directed straight away to the Kama Sutra rather than to anything in the Christian tradition. So I just find those cultural differences really, really interesting. And of course, when we get into the symbology of temples, there's incredible detail if we're going to start talking about conception and fertility. You, in many of your videos, have shown ancient carvings that are very precise in their knowledge of the reproductive cycle of sperm and ovum, and then symbols that look like they're depicting in vitro fertilization. This is a very, very advanced culture around fertility that was there in the East for a very long time. And I'm absolutely fascinated by that. And it relates, doesn't it, to the prevalence of lingams in temples in the East, which again is something that's really quite different to anything you'd find if you went into a Christian cathedral.
Yeah, there are many. The lingam is basically an iconic symbol of Shiva. For those of who, you know, viewers who don't know, a lingam is just a cylinder-like structure, right? It's kind of a symbol of the Lord Shiva, who's kind of the supreme god of Hinduism. But you don't normally see a statue of Shiva. You'll see him as a lingam. And this lingam has kind of like it's baffled people for thousands of years, right? Because I mean, of course, people think even mainstream archaeologists, historians, they just simply call it a phallic symbol. They simply call it a symbol of fertility. And when you see it along with the yoni, the base kind of looks like a kind of an oval shape with a spout. And automatically people think of it as a female reproductive organ too, right? So this is very, very common. So they just think of the lingam and the yoni as a male and female part, right? Now, of course, whether it's true or not, this symbol has baffled people. Like the lingams are everywhere. So when we went to Cambodia now, I found 1,000 lingams carved underwater, not underground, right? Mm. Found lingams carved underwater. So if you go to a remote temple called Phnom Kulen Mountain in Cambodia, there's water coming from the top of the mountain. And these ancient builders are carved like 1,000 lingams on the bedrock. And the water has to flow through these lingams. Okay. Now, why did they do this? Because according to locals, what happened was, even though this water was coming from the top of the mountain and it was reaching the fields, the crops, the rice was not growing well. So they had to carve these lingams all over the water. So the water gets energized because of these lingams, increasing the fertility, right? So the water makes the soil more fertile. And that's why, you know, Cambodia became like very good in growing rice. They still grow like 3 to 4 times a year or something like that. So you can see how the lingam, the fertility, you know, the yoni and the rituals, it's all connected together. If you ever go to Indonesia, if you go to Java Island, okay, there's one mysterious pyramid known as Candi Suku. And that those are very, very interesting. Not many people, mostly nobody goes there because, again, it's on top of a mountain. It's like in the mountains, and it's kind of like you have to stay in weird places where you don't have like hot water and all that stuff because it's very remote in Java. But if you, David Childress went there, and I've been there. When I went to the Candi Suku Temple, they have a particular chamber that's locked. Okay. But if you peep in and if you look at it, they literally show like the male part entering the female part like that. Like when I posted it, I got the video banned on Instagram because it's literally like it looks real, right? Like it looks like real intercourse like that. So you have, and Hindu temples have like no issue showing it as it is. It's just a part of life for us. We know without that, I wouldn't be here and you wouldn't be here, right? So why are we making it into like a taboo, like dirty subject?
Exactly.
One of the very first places that we're going to go to when we reach Bangkok, we're going to have like a welcome dinner where we talk about all the places that we're going to go to. Now, the very first, like on the very first day, I'm going to take you to the Ayutthaya Historical Park. This is actually very close to Bangkok. This is like an hour away from Bangkok. Okay, so you don't have to do anything. I know, but like some of you will come from Australia. People are coming from the, you're flying from the US. You guys will be tired, right? So we don't want to be driving you guys for like 3 hours the next day. So we're just going to take you guys to the Ayutthaya Historical Park, and that's where you find these temples, Wat Mahathat and Wat Rajapurana. There's one temple known as the Wat Rajapurana in the Ayutthaya Historical Park. Mahathat is also there. Okay. Now the Wat Rajapurana temple is actually the highlight of the Thailand tour. Okay. You don't want to miss it. You don't want to miss the first day because even by mainstream accounts, the temple is about 600 years old, Wat Rajapurana, and it will look like a rocket ship, and we have to climb up. We have to climb up like maybe 100, 200 feet above, and we go into the main chamber, and inside the main chamber, the main deities are all gone. They're all destroyed. Now, we don't know if it's Lord Buddha. We don't know if it's Lord Vishnu, whoever was there. And you will be standing in front of kind of an empty niche, and you can pay your respect. But underneath your feet, they found 100 or 200 kilograms of gold. Okay? They actually found it. Again, this is not mythology. Well, you will not even realize this, right? I'm kind of giving you a little bit of a spoiler here. Because if you go to, I usually take these people to take all the participants to the Wat Rajapurana temple. They feel like they're climbing the top of, like into the main chamber of the tower, and they'll be praying. And it's kind of like you'll have like all the, it'll be dark. It won't be like a modern place. But most people don't even realize that they're standing on top of a deep underground chamber that has three or four levels underground. And they had found at least 100 or 200 kilograms of gold underneath that. Okay. So if you come outside, it's not theory. You'll find all the plaques and the pictures of it. I'll show you more pictures. So when we come out of it, we can literally see, I'll shine the flashlight and you can see the underground chambers, not just one level, two levels deep. The third level we can't see because the stairs are going the opposite side. Okay. So you can literally see two underground levels in this structure, and they found insane objects. Okay. They found that, not when I'm saying they found hundreds of kilograms of gold. I'm not talking about like gold coins or like gold nuggets or something like that. Okay. They found something that looks like a golden rocket kind of thing. Okay. And on top of it, it even has an antenna.
Wow.
Yeah. So you can, if you go to the Bangkok Museum, some of it is still displayed there. Some people actually, they can't, they just get very excited and they go to the Bangkok Museum and some of it is displayed there. Okay. So what happened was they had hundreds of kilograms of gold. And of course, as usual, there was politics and people were stealing most of it. And they were able to only get maybe 10 or 20% of it. And the looters had gotten most of it. But even what they recovered is very, 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 very interesting. Okay. So they had like 7 layers of lingams or containers. So they would have an iron cylinder. And they thought it was just an iron cylinder inside the underground vault. But they removed it, and underneath there was another tin cylinder, and underneath there was another silver cylinder, and underneath there was another golden cylinder. And inside that, they found like a rocket ship kind of stupa. And then there was a statue of Lord Buddha made of gold sitting inside that. And he was looking at a crystal. He had a crystal in front of him. Now, this is all documented by the Thai government. You can actually find it, I think, in Thai PBS. Okay. So think about this, right? So we're going into kind of a 600-year-old Buddhist temple. You go there, right? You think it's a place of worship and you can feel the energy, but that place goes like hundreds of feet deep. And it had a whole underground, like, world inside with so many chambers with all kinds of, like, gold. And if they just wanted to store gold, they will just, like, today you don't store gold as, like, kind of gold rockets or something like that. You just probably buy, you know, gold bullions or coins or something like that, right? So they were using something with it, okay?
Yes.
And this is an amazing temple that nobody should miss. Even if you go to Bangkok, I'm just saying that even if they don't come to this tour and if they go into Bangkok to have fun, they can go and visit the Wat Rajaburana temple. It'll blow their minds.
So two questions I have flowing from what you just said. What do you think is the significance of so much gold being associated with these ancient places? There must be more to the story than this is a good place to keep, you know, a precious metal. And the other side of the question is, we have written narrative traditions, but do you think there might be a canon of knowledge that's being passed along from generation to generation among the architects and engineers who have produced these ancient places?
Yes. One of the to address the first question, a lot of people think that this is gold. You know, this is the equivalent. This is ancient money, right? This is the one of the precious metal that can be used anytime, even today. Even 5,000 years ago for money, even if the whole government collapses, if the government in Iran just collapses, the people who have gold, they still survive, right? Because even if all the currency is destroyed, or oil too, that's why it's called black gold, right? So, because you can, but the main detail about gold is that if you take a piece of iron, if you take any kind of metal or wood or anything, and if you let's say it gets submerged in the sea, gold is the only material that does not have any type of corrosion or nothing happens to it. Okay, nothing happens to it. So if you have iron, it can get rusted. All types of metals have oxidation, whatever, right? They disintegrate. Wood disintegrates. But nothing happens to gold. Okay, and gold is like very malleable, very ductile, right? This is why we always use them, like very highly conductive too. And this is why we use them in computers, and we use them in the phones, and we use them in all sorts of electronics too. Because gold has all these qualities, okay? It's impossible to destroy gold. It's impossible to destroy gold. This is why all the alchemists were not trying to create gold because it's money, because gold is kind of a god that can that lasts forever, right? So this is one of the core features of gold, and this is why all the ancient people were going for gold, because it's indestructible, like nothing happens to it. Okay, so now, and if you just Google this, you'll be shocked that people in India are still buying gold every day. They're buying gold after gold. Like the women in India, I think they control 10 or 20%. The women in India are controlling 10 or 20% of the entire gold in the world. Most people don't know that, okay? And every month they're buying gold. The women always like to put gold because this is an ancient tradition, right? Because they still value this. Now, if I'm an engineer, right? So if I'm having a computer factory and if I'm buying a bunch of gold, I'm not just gonna store it. I'm actually using it for some purpose. Right? And This is what we see in ancient temples. We don't see them. We don't mostly see them as ornaments, or we don't see them as coins. We don't see them as like gold bars. We don't see them like that. One of the things that you do see in Thailand, and it's still in the museum, okay? It looked like a golden elephant. I've even shown this on my YouTube channel in the same video about Wat Rajapurana. So it looked like an elephant, okay? So it's like a golden elephant. But after some time, they realized it's not a solid gold elephant. The head kind of can be unscrewed. Okay? Now, inside, they found traces of palm leaves, broken palm leaves. Now, this indicates that there must have been some type of an ancient palm leaf scroll. Like they usually write these manuscripts. So these guys were using this gold, like what better thing to do than to protect your writings? Then if you use any type of metal, if you use wood, even worse, if you leave it outside, if you put it in wood, it disintegrates, it attracts termites, it'll be gone, right? But if you put it in gold, even if it gets submerged, even if somebody was taking it in a ship and it just goes there, it's like an airtight system. And this is what they were doing. They were just using this gold as technology. And I think there was one research, I forgot the name of it. And gold has this weird way of creating positive energy. The gold itself has a weird, strange way of creating some type of energy. And it's customary for us to, whenever we install a statue, any statue, even today, let's say I bought a house and I'm going to put a statue, I will put a little piece of gold and 9 different gemstones and bury it under the statue. Even today, we do this all the time. Okay, so because there's, and this is all mentioned in ancient texts, by the way. This is all mentioned in ancient texts. This is called the Navaratna, and this is called the Bhumi Puja. So when somebody buys a piece of land, they will again dig that piece of land and they will bury all these gold and 9 gemstones. Because it's supposed to give you some type of a positive energy, right? Mm. When you go there, and again, this goes back to the idea of why people cry in these ancient temples, right? So why did people go to the Themai temple and they're sitting in the main chamber? And to be frank, some of them don't even believe in God or gods. They just cry, right? So what is it that is kind of pulling the tears out, right? What is happening inside your body? Like, what is happening when you're sitting in the ground, bare feet, and you're touching the ground? You're literally grounding yourself, right? Are you just grounding? Or underneath you have all these metals, you know, kind of giving you some kind of force. So we don't know, right? It's better to keep an open mind and keep researching, because
yes,
they know more than us.
This leads very neatly to my next question for you, Praveen. You've been researching these things for many years now. You've been traveling around temples in Indonesia, Cambodia, India, Thailand. And I want to ask what the cumulative effect of this travel, this exposure to these places and ancient narratives has been upon you. Is it just that you, year by year, have more and more information, or is something else happening to you along the way?
It kind of literally has a very therapeutic effect. Okay, you don't age. You tend to dismiss all the negative energy. You tend to dismiss. You tend to walk away from all the negative people. You become a very positive person overall. It definitely, most of the Eastern cultures have this effect. And it's not just, I'm Hindu, right? But even if you're a Buddhist, and you can see that they become much more passive, but they're much more happier, more peaceful people, right? They don't need validation from others, right? And that's what you'll realize as you go more and more ancient temples. I'm sure that happens even to you when you read more and more Bible, and it makes you more peaceful. But the Eastern cultures, when you go to these temples, you gather the positive energy somehow. Even if you don't believe in it, you gather it. Okay, so even if you don't, it's like, I don't believe in meditation, right? You could do something like this, right? So I don't believe in all this meditation, right? But I'm just gonna sit quietly for like 2 months, you'll actually become a much more happier person, whether you like it or not, you know. And this is what temples did to me. This is what temples do to me. And it is a very addictive thing. It's very addictive. The people who came to the Cambodia tour, more than 30, 40% were the same people who went to Thailand with me. Okay, so
yes, I can understand that.
Yeah, because it's not only just me. I like to take credit for this, you know, because I'm so good. But no, it's the temples.
Well, I can vouch for that, because we've actually got people joining us, Praveen, in November, who were with me last year at some of the sacred sites in Turkey at the Van province, and it does become like an addictive thing. When you go to these places, and it does something to retune you and recalibrate you in some way and refresh and energize you, you realize, yes, this is actually the purpose of these places. And of course, I want to go to more of them. So you who are watching, this is another reason why you should come with Praveen and me in November to the Temples of Thailand on Third Eye Tours. Let me conclude with this question for you, Praveen. I just said that that's a reason people should come. What would you say is a reason that people might want to physically be in these places rather than just sort of look them up on the internet or read about them in a book?
Well, I mean, it's like you see a nice juicy burger online and you're eating that burger, right? So it's completely different. Right? So you can just keep looking at that nice juicy burger all you want, right? But that's not going to get you satisfied. You actually have to eat the burger, right? That's a completely different experience. It's like an immersive experience. We go there, we touch the temple, we feel the carvings, and people, it is like a real pilgrimage, okay? People have developed a great bonding with one another and with these ancient sites. Okay, and one of the places that we didn't discuss about in Thailand is also another pyramid. Okay, there is an ancient pyramid called the Sitep Pyramid in Thailand, and we're gonna go and climb that pyramid. No, people don't. This is exclusive access, and the energy you will feel, you cannot describe it. Like, we cannot describe it with words. Okay, you literally have to come there and physically feel the energy. Right. And it has various angles to it. Some people are interested in ancient technology, how these stone blocks were all connected together, how these structures were built. Some people come there for healing. Some people come there for pilgrimage. Some people are just coming there to have fun. Okay. And it's all fun. So you realize that when you go to a country like Thailand, and we go to all these ancient sites, it's just a transformative experience. You just become another person, right? So, and this is why people should come, for no matter for what reason, they can come to see these ancient sites. They can come there for healing. They can come there to see ancient technology. They can just come there to have fun. Of course, I'm very excited to have you, Paul, by the way. I'm very, very excited to have you, because I don't know, like, you know, your perspective, I think it's going to blow my mind. And I would really love to see how you're explaining the temple. It's going to be amazing.
Well, thank you. And the feeling is mutual. That's a great note on which to conclude our conversation for today. But while we're together, I just want to ask you how people can keep up to the minute with all the work that you're doing.
Oh, just go on YouTube and just search Praveen Mohan. You'll find my channel. It's called Real Praveen Mohan, like Real Donald Trump, because somebody else took the Praveen Mohan.
And oh, then you I can see. Find...
yeah, that's why he has that, right? Because somebody of else made that ID before him. And same thing happened to me. And there's going to be a new social media site every day that pops up, and you're going to mess, and then you have to call yourself Real Paul Wallace, right? Because somebody's impersonating you.
Of course. But
you can go on YouTube, you can go on Facebook, you can go on Instagram. I got mostly millions of followers, like 2.4 million on YouTube, 1.4 million on Facebook, and so on. I will post daily or at least weekly content. And I'd like to find new content, right? So I'd like to find new carvings, new temples that most people don't go to. I don't normally just go and rehash the information. So if you ever get a chance, you can just go online and find me, Praveen Mohan, on YouTube. I'll feed your curiosity every day.
Awesome. Praveen, thank you so much for joining us today. I'm looking forward to November, and we'll look forward to our next conversation.
Thanks a lot for having me, Paul, and for all your viewers. You know, if you guys come to Thailand, it's going to be an awesome experience. I guarantee it.
I've made a free module available for you from Ancient Knowledge Academy, where we begin to look again at the ancient words of the Bible, and especially the language of Elohim and Yahweh, and the other mysterious beings whose presence is often hidden by conventional translations. If you've ever wondered what the texts are really describing, then follow the link, watch the free module, and take your first steps inside Ancient Knowledge Academy. At the Academy, we find ways of bringing ancient and ancestral story to bear on our own worldview. If you're on a journey of reframing faith or old beliefs, or reframing your worldview to get a deeper understanding of who we really are, what our history tells us as a human species, what our potential is, then you will enjoy the topics we explore at Ancient Knowledge Academy. We look at ancient civilizations and ancient texts. We consider lost time and study how belief systems can shape perception. Without panic, without dogma, and with an open mind to continue in our journey of exploration. And if you'd like to stand in the landscape where so many of these origin stories converge, the lands around Lake Van, the lands of modern Turkey and ancient Armenia, the place many traditions point to as the reboot of civilization. I take a group there every year because standing in the place itself is very different to reading a story. If you'd like to join me in the Van Province, go to ancientknowledgetours.com. And if you'd like to continue a journey with an online learning community, come to ancientknowledgeacademy.com. Wherever you are in your journey, whether you're just curious or if you're redefining how you understand humanity, you are very welcome to continue your exploration with me.